What I would actually like to do today is start with some practice. I don't know if you all worked with this orange ball practice, but let's start with that and then talk about it a little bit. So you remember the basic idea here was to imagine or visualize or see in front of you an orange ball, orange globe, orange sphere. It doesn't matter too much how you think of it, but you want to think of it as being as open to change as possible. In other words, it's not one fixed thing. You've got a possibility of really playing with this orange ball. And the reason for doing that is we're kind of saying the orange ball is a simple thought, right? That's our model. The ball, seeing the ball, the act of seeing is an act of thinking. It's like imagining your mother. That's the example I always use. You imagine or you think of your mother and an image of your mother comes into your mind. Well, so I'm calling that a thought. This orange ball is also a thought. And once you have this thought, you're free to play with it. And so what I've basically tried to do is pick the simplest possible thought or thought form in space, if we go back to that language. So let's just go ahead and take a few minutes. You can do this eyes open, eyes closed. You can turn off the video, which I think I will probably do if I can figure out how to do that. And we'll focus on this orange ball. That's the practice. So let's do that for a few minutes and then we'll talk about it, okay? Let's go. Okay, that is short. Excuse me, that wasn't very much time, but maybe it's enough to remind you of this of what we're doing here and of any practice you did with the orange ball during the week. So what did you notice either now or what have you been noticing if you've been working with this during the week? Anybody want to say anything about that?
It's easier. It's easier to focus on the orange ball the more you do it,
Okay.
and your thoughts are not so scattered, and you're kind of able to, or at least I am. I don't know about anybody else, but I'm able to focus more. Like this time I did it, there was only a few times that, looking back, I can see where my thoughts kind of drifted. So it's easier to do, and to me, that's amazing.
Okay. Well, good. So it's a vehicle for focusing the mind, you could say. It's like if you have, if you think one thought intently, then maybe you're bringing the resources of the mind to bear on that thought. And this is a very simple thought. So, okay. Somebody else.
It moves by itself.
The ball moves by itself without your intending it to. Okay. Do you think that's true for thoughts in general?
I do.
Thoughts move by themselves without our intending to. That seems right to me too. Because after all, we can't really control the arising of a thought or a passing away of a thought. We can't, well, I guess the point's clear. Okay. Anything else you want to say about thoughts?
Well, does that beg the question, can we control thoughts? Is that a limit to be inquired into?
Well, did you try, Hayward, did you try to also move the ball in addition to having it move by itself?
It occurred to me that thought was much like breath. It could be volitional, where I could think a thought, or it could just like breathe itself or think itself.
Okay, so you were
Not
satisfied.
like breath. Yeah. It
Right.
could be both.
Okay. So you were satisfied to let the ball be itself, as it were. Okay, that seems fine, but it doesn't then address Tina's question, could we in fact take, I guess you could say, take control of thoughts. And is that a limit? It does seem to be a limit in terms of our ordinary experience. And that would be one thing to experiment with the orange ball because it's such a simple, it's a very simple world, the world of the ball. It's, me and my visualization, or however you want to think about it. Okay. Anybody else want to comment about that?
This is Michael.
Yeah?
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Michael.
I found my mind sort of like not able to focus in a steady way. It's like I have to keep sort of fooling it, like throwing a can of orange paint on a lacrosse ball, gray ball as it goes by, or pulling an orange beach ball surprisingly out of an orange wall. And sort of like I have to sort of keep fooling my mind to briefly getting an orange ball out of the flux that was going on in my mind.
That's interesting. So you, I like that, throwing paint. So you happen to have a gray ball around, so you just threw orange paint on it to get your orange. Is that
I figured it'd be easier to conjure that up.
right?
That's
That's
pretty
nice.
cool.
Okay. Did anybody try moving the ball here and there?
Yes, I did that. This is Sudhabe. And first, I had a ping pong ball envisioned, and I start playing it on the table in my mind. And then I was wondering if there's any other kind of orange ball that I can do anything else with it. And then it changed to a basketball ball, and in the gym, and I noticed how you started me on this, the field change. When I was playing ping pong, what was the field and the feeling versus when I was in the gym and playing the basketball, how the feeling tone changed. And then there were a bunch of M&M's, small orange ball that I wanted to eat. And then how that changed the field of my focus and the desires in there, and it was so different than the interaction with a competitor who I was playing ping pong. So the field was also in the background changing.
Okay, well, that's very nice. Did you, in fact, try to eat the orange ball?
I ate all the M&M's.
Right. And what happened to the orange ball after you ate it? Or is that too messy to describe?
Was the imagination stopped right there. It was just it disappeared, and I even saw, well, what would happen to the to disappear the to make it disappear the ping pong ball, and I saw a hammer smashing it, but that didn't disappear it. So I went to that because the M&Ms kind of disappeared.
Okay. So let me ask you this, kind of going back to Hayward's question, how did the idea of orange M&Ms show up? Was that something you decided, or did it just show up as another
Yes.
alternative?
No. I had an inquiry within me, and it was a volitional that what other orange ball do I know? What other orange ball exists? Because Jack kind of freely gave us the assignment, think of an orange ball. To me, M&M is kind of an orange ball. Ping pong ball is an orange ball. There was not as much restriction on my imagination. So I inquired into it, and sure enough, it showed up.
Interesting. Yeah, let me just tell you something about the origin of this. I actually was given a very similar assignment when I was studying at the Nyingma Institute back in the 1970s with an orange ball, and it stayed in my mind. And one of the reasons it did is because you may well not remember this, but at that time the chain of gas stations that runs under the name 76 Union, as a kind of an identifying mark, was using a little orange ball. And in fact, I don't remember the details, but they were giving their customers little orange balls to put on top of their antennas. So as you were walking down the street, you'd see these little orange balls floating on, stuck on top of people's antennas. So it helped remind you of the practice, and perhaps that's why we were given it. But so we don't have that advantage of having lots of little orange balls in our environment, but we're certainly free to visualize them, to make them up. Did anybody try to go inside the orange ball?
It
Okay, Tina.
was kind of fun. It was relaxing to go inside the orange ball. And you know how in the first chapter in the Dynamics of Time and Space, he talks about a sail and spreading it out, and that's kind of how it felt, spreading out to where you couldn't tell the point of the orange ball, where it began or where it ended.
Okay, yeah, that kind of makes sense. It completely occupied your field of vision once you were inside it. Right? Instead of so here we have Sudaba eating her orange ball, but you got eaten by the orange ball, so or fed yourself to the orange ball. Okay, well, so one thing that comes out of this is a an appreciation, I think, for the imagination and creativity, you could say, of the mind, which people worked with this in very different ways, and you may want to keep working with it, and see where it leads you. But my interest is more in the orange ball, as I said, as an example of a thought. Just a very simple example, because typically when you have a thought, it's actually very richly detailed. Not all thoughts are. I guess that's one thing we want to look at. But especially, like let's take the example of a memory. There's so much going on in a situation that you remember, and if you tried to describe the whole thing, it would take a long time. But with an orange ball, it's just an orange ball, you know. It's kind of, that's the end of it. Actually, having said that, let me say that one of the things I tried doing was I remembered a situation I was in yesterday, and then I tried to put an orange ball in the corner of the room, you know. So I was basically experimenting with the possibility of trying to have two thoughts present at once. One was the orange ball, and one was something else. So I chose a memory. I don't know if that really worked. I think what I got was more one thought, which was partly memory, you know, with an orange ball stuck on, rather than two separate streams of thought that were kind of merging. So there may well be a way of doing that, of merging or maintaining two thoughts at once. Actually, let me tell you something about that just briefly. From time to time, in these various TSK programs, I mention a friend of mine who's a psychology professor, and he gives people beepers, and he beeps them at random times, and then he asks them to make a note about what was going on just before the beep, and then he interviews them within 24 hours to really try to get a detailed understanding of what was happening just in that moment right before the beep. And all the skill comes in the interview process because you have to first of all train people not to give you their theories about what they were doing, but their immediate experience. And second, you have to be careful not to lead people, not to put ideas or words into their mouth, as it were. But anyway, he's developed that principle, and there's a case that he likes to talk about that as an extreme case, but it's something that he finds in certain kinds of people, of a woman who would keep many different strands, many different streams of thought going at the same time. So, you know, she was a bank teller, and she would apparently really irritate the other bank tellers because she would be counting money, which is something that people, bank tellers, do, and she'd be having a conversation at the same time. She'd be trying to talk to them. And for her, that was just natural to do that. But the other people kept feeling, you know, being interrupted. They couldn't focus on the counting of the money if she was trying to talk to them. So she had to learn not to do that. But another example was she kept three television sets going at the same time. And from her description, she didn't, it wasn't that she skipped from one to another to try to keep track of them. She really was just watching all three shows at the same time. And in fact, the reason, you know, she was someone who had psychological problems and issues. She was suicidal and so on. And eventually that was resolved, but one of the things she complained about was that she could no longer watch three television shows at the same time. So I'm bringing that up just because I think there are real possibilities, you know, for the way the mind works. Tina, you raised the question, is it a limit on the mind that we can only, that we can't control our thoughts? And it's a very good question to explore. And all I'm suggesting by giving you that example is, you know, it might well be possible to develop a capacity, let's say, to think several things at once. If you thought that was helpful, you know, but it'd be, at least be worth exploring. Okay, well, what I want to do now, I want to have us do another little practice session. And in this one, I want to go to the question that I've asked several times in the orientations. And you know, I've been asking you to look at it, but we haven't actually discussed it. But now I'd like to take a few minutes and use that as the basis for discussion. And the question is, what kinds of thoughts do you have? And you know, at the risk of putting ideas in your mind, I'll just point out that, you know, if you ask people that question, again, I'm thinking of my friend who does these beeping experiments. Sometimes people will say, well, I was having a thought in words. I could hear a voice in my head saying such and such. And sometimes they'll say, I had an image in my mind of such and such. That was my thought. And sometimes they'll say, well, it wasn't in words, and it wasn't an image. It was just kind of, I was thinking it. It was unformulated. That's the word my friend uses. It was an unformulated thought. So those are at least three options, and then maybe there are combinations. Maybe there's an image and words, or you know, there's all sorts of possibilities. I'm not saying that's the whole range of what could be. But that's what I want you to look at, is just let the mind go, let thoughts come, and be asking yourself the question, what form does a thought take? With the idea, you know, it's still a thought. For instance, if your shoulder is itching, the itching itself probably we wouldn't say that was a thought. But you might think
you
about.
You think about it.
Yeah, but it might be that you think about it. It might be that you think about the itch. Maybe you say, "Well, should I scratch or whatever?" Okay, so that's the question. What forms do thoughts take in your experience? So let's go ahead and look at that question for a few minutes, and then we'll have some more discussion. Okay. Let's come back. Now, before we get into that, I'm going to point out I've been in this full screen mode, and when I'm in full screen mode, I can't also see the chats. And so I went out of full screen mode and I saw that a couple of people had commented on the orange ball, Karin and Bruce. So I'm sorry for not having noticed that. I'll have to try to figure out how to do both things at once here. Or maybe it's not so important to be in full screen mode. Anyway, take a look at what they pointed out about their own experience. And I think it might actually relate to what we're going to talk about now. So that's an aside. So what did people find, and what kinds of thoughts came up, or what did you notice about thoughts? What counts as a thought, and what else would you like to say?
This is Linda. I noticed that, I'm hearing an echo, but that's okay. I noticed that there's the kind of words that memories tended to be images, but there was this other kind of classification that seemed to be kind of related to a feeling in the body at the same time as a kind of shaping or tone, not shaping, but tone or coloring of mind that seemed to be a thought, although it didn't have content, but it was that same sort of preoccupation or usurping of awareness.
Okay, well, that's interesting. So you're saying that you're suggesting that a characteristic of thoughts is that they kind of usurp or take over awareness. And you're saying, if that's my criterion, then there's this kind of very unformed thing that seems to be doing the same thing. Is that right? Yeah. Okay.
That's right.
Okay. And let me go back. I'm not in full screen mode now, so I'm seeing the chat. And so Pat raises a question, and it's in regard to a comment that we made before we did this practice. How is an itch not a thought? Right. But I think, Pat, I think I'd say you kind of answer that question in your next comment, because you say when you feel a sensation, that's a thought that you're describing to yourself. So the question would be, and I'm not giving an answer here, but the question would be, is there a sensation that you don't describe to yourself, that you just sense, let's say? Or is it automatically the case that whenever a sensation or other kind of perception, maybe a seeing, comes up, that you describe it, at least at the level of naming it? And if that were the case, maybe we would have to say there is nothing but thoughts. There's just a stream of thoughts. And that's not inconsistent with this idea we talked about last week of the field communique. And I talked about that a little last week in terms of the thought of the whole. So these are all good questions. I'm just calling people's attention to it. Anybody else in terms of what came up in experience right now? Yes? There was someone
Oh, I
else,
got an
but
echo too.
yeah.
Thinking of responding, saying something like I am now, I thought that's one of the characteristics of thoughts, whether it contains the impulse to act. I thought of somebody listening to this recording of this, not live, they won't be feeling that way. They won't be trying to prepare a comment
Right.
as they're watching their thoughts. That's maybe a characteristic of a distinction you can make about thoughts, whether it's action oriented or not.
Okay, that's interesting. Now they might possibly have a related experience that wasn't action oriented. That's the distinction you made. But let's say somebody's listening to this recording, and at a certain point they think, Oh, if I had been there, I would have asked this question right now. Right? So it's not something they can do, but it's sort of thinking about an action they would have done. Again, it's just kind of a complication. It's just an addition, I guess, of what's possible. Okay, there was somebody else who was started to speak at the same time as Michael.
Idea of not allowing the thoughts to completely form. And I found myself just kind of being there with the sounds and the images, and then I felt that presence again pushing through, and then I formed a thought about that. But basically, I was able to just kind of not allow the thoughts to completely form, and that was kind of neat.
So this is related to what Linda said, right? If the characteristic of thought is that it kind of takes over or pulls you away, and Rinpoche does talk about the gravity of thinking, you know, as something that kind of pulls you into its own domain, and I used the image of being kidnapped by a thought. You're saying you didn't let that happen.
Right, It's
Okay.
cool.
Okay. And you know, I'm going to mention something that is related to that that I found interesting in this little few minutes of practice here. It seemed to me that that a thought was an invitation, or let's put it this way, it's kind of like there were two stages. I would have a thought, and it was not exactly in words, although it could have gone into words, and it was not exactly an image, it could have gone into an image, but it was unformed, but it was an invitation to really go into the whole thought. You know, I don't remember right now, I'm sorry, I don't have a clear example, but I remember I was thinking about some situation, and I had a vague sense of the situation, but I wasn't yet in the situation. And the thought, you know, I thought of the situation and it could have gone in that direction, but it didn't. So that was what I mean. It was like the first stage of the thought, and then the second stage would have completed it. And if it had completed it, I would have been lost in it. So that was my sense. Karen makes a comment here that maybe there's a sensation first and then a naming or thinking. So I think that's in response to what Pat says, I think, and it's kind of similar to what I was saying. We can certainly take that theme up.
If we broaden this, instead of thinking of thoughts, if we talked about the content of mind, then we could talk about images, words, and sensations. And then the sensations would have the same position or the same value as the words and the images.
Right, and the question would come up, which is the one that Karn and Pat have been raising, to what extent is the sensation also a thought, or is to what extent are thoughts a component of any sensation? And that's certainly worth exploring and looking at. So here's Bruce's comment. I'm reading these to people because I'm not sure everybody has the chat screen up. Well, I guess I know some people don't because they're on the telephone. So Bruce says thought seemed mostly to be verbal commentary and simple images. Or they can get very complex and be like dreams. Or there can be a background hum. Okay. So, and I'm not even going to get into the gestalt, Bruce. So you raise four or five possibilities, and I think that's fair. I think that's there's lots of possibilities for thinking. And then Pat and Linda are continuing the question about sensations and thoughts about sensations. So Pat, you raise a very interesting example. You know, Kathleen, if I'm not sure if we can capture these chats, we probably can. Maybe you could figure out a way to capture the chat and post it on the website as a post. Anyway, Pat says, well, so she gives an interesting example. She feels a situation and it feels weird. So she's afraid that something is wrong. So she says, I'm not going to think that thought. So that has to do with controlling the thought, which is one of the questions we've been looking at. And Linda adds a third layer here, a sensation, then a feeling tone or a coloring, and then it gels, it congeals, I might say, into a thought. Okay, well, that's good. I think people need to be exploring in this way. Just to touch for a moment on the reading, Rinpoche says that that thoughts turn into something, they turn into a zero point. That's the language he uses. And I think what he means by that is a little bit like a point that philosophers, Western philosophers, sometimes make about experience, or we could say thoughts, being transparent. And what they mean by that is, so suppose I'm thinking about my mother, and someone says, well, what was that experience of thinking about your mother like? The transparency argument says, well, it was, I can't find anything about the experience of thinking about my mother other than just thinking about my mother, other than just the content, you know? So there's this image of my mother or whatever it is. And so the thought is transparent. We can't see it. And that's what Rinpoche is saying here. That he's saying that's our ordinary understanding. He's not saying that's the whole story. But he's saying our ordinary understanding is that thoughts are the zero point. And sometimes when he uses that term, he uses it like if you think about a graph. So you have the x-axis and the y-axis. And in the middle where they meet, there's a zero point, but that zero point doesn't show up on the graph. So it makes the whole thing emerge. So thoughts kind of disappear in that sense. He says that's how we ordinarily think about it, but in fact, thoughts are a lot richer than that. And he has this lovely phrase on page 55 where he talks about the transitional constructions. I think he's talking about thoughts here, and he says one way you could look at thoughts would be as the transitional constructions of multidimensional experience. So transitional suggests a dynamic, and construction suggests an action, and multidimensional suggests that it goes beyond any particular label we can assign it, and then it's all tied into experience. So those are all things to explore. Well, and then the last thing to mention about the reading is he does go into this question at the end of the reading for this week about the relationship between experience and thoughts, and the kind of claim that gets made sometimes, and that we've been exploring in this discussion, that an experience, that thoughts are different from experience, and he questions that. So you might just go back and look at it in light of the discussion we've had. Okay, good. I think that does it for this week. I'll go ahead and post the orientation, and next week we move on. Well, I guess that's all I have to say. Okay, see you next week.